Cursing, he brushed them off. Samuel Tarley, he remembered. I can still deal with Sir Piggy. He wrapped his scarf around his face, pulled up his hood, and went striding through the camp to where the cowards slept. The snow was falling so heavily that he got lost among the tents, but finally he spotted the snug little windbreak the fat boy had made for himself between a rock and the raven cages. Tarley was buried beneath a mound of black wool blankets and shaggy furs. The snow was drifting in to cover him. He looked like some kind of soft round mountain. Steel whispered on leather, faint as hope, as Chet eased his dagger from his sheath. One of the ravens quarked.
Snow,
murmured another, peering through the bars with black eyes. The first added a
snow
of its own. He edged past them, placing each foot carefully. He would clap his left hand down over the fat boy's mouth to muffle his cries, and then, oh! He stopped mid-step, swallowing his curse, as the sound of the horn shuddered through the camp, faint and far yet unmistakable.
Not now! Gods be damned, not now!
The old bear had hidden far eyes in the ring of trees around the fist to give warning of any approach.
Jarman Buckwell's back from the giant stair, Chet figured, or Corin Halfhand from the skirling pass.
A single blast of the horn meant brothers returning. If it was the Halfhand, Jon Snow might be with him, alive. Sam Tarley sat up, puffy-eyed, and stared at the snow in confusion. The ravens were cawing noisily, and Chet could hear his dogs baying.
Half the bloody camp's awake.
His gloved fingers clenched round the dagger's hilt as he waited for the sound to die away. But no sooner had it gone than it came again, louder and longer. Oh! Gods! He heard Sam Tarley whimper. The fat boy lurched to his knees, his feet tangled in his cloak and blankets. He kicked them away and reached for a chainmail hauberk he'd hung on the rock nearby. As he slipped the huge tent of a garment down over his head and wriggled into it, he spied Chet standing there.
"Was it two?" he asked. "I dreamed I heard two blasts."
"No dream," said Chet. "Two blasts to call the watch to arms. Two blasts for foes approaching. There's an axe out there with Piggy writ on it, fat boy. Two blasts means wildlings."
The fear on that big moon face made him want to laugh.
"Bugger them all to Seven Hells. Bloody armor, bloody manse raider, bloody small wood," he said. "They wouldn't be on us for another."
Ooh!
The sound went on and on and on until it seemed it would never die. The ravens were flapping and screaming, flying about their cages and banging off the bars, and all about the camp the brothers of the Night's Watch were rising, donning their armour, buckling on sword belts, reaching for battle axes and bows. Samuel Tarley stood shaking, his face the same colour as the snow that swirled down all around them.
"Three," he squeaked to Chet. "That was three. I heard three. Oh, they never blow three. Not for hundreds and thousands of years. Three means..."
"Others."
Chet made a sound that was half a laugh and half a sob. And suddenly, his small clothes were wet, and he could feel the piss running down his leg, see steam rising off the front of his breeches.
The shadows of the afternoon were growing long when Dunk reined up on the edge of Broad Ashford Meadow. 3 score pavilions had already risen on the grassy field. Some were small, some large, some square, some round, some of sailcloth, some of linen, some of silk, but all were brightly colored, with long banners streaming from their center poles, brighter than a field of wildflowers with rich reds and sunny yellows, countless shades of green and blue, deep blacks and grays and purples. The old man had ridden with some of these knights. Others Dunk knew from tales told in common rooms and round campfires. Though he had never learned the magic of reading or writing, the old man had been relentless when it came to teaching him heraldry, often drilling him as they rode. The nightingales belonged to Lord Charon of the Marches, as skilled with the high harp as he was with a lance. The crowned stag was for Sir Lionel Baratheon, the Laughing Storm. Dunk picked out the Tarly Huntsman, House Dundarian's Purple Lightning, the Red Apple of the Fossaways. There roared the Lion of Lannister, gold on crimson, and there the dark green sea turtle of the Estermonts swam across a pale green field. The brown tent beneath Red Stallion could only belong to Sir Otho Bracken, who was called the Brute of Bracken since slaying Lord Quentin Blackwood 3 years past during a tourney at King's Landing. Dunk heard that Sir Otho struck so hard with the blunted long axe that he stove in the visor of Lord Blackwood's helm and the face beneath it. He saw some Blackwood banners as well, on the west edge of the meadow, as distant from Sir Otho as they could be. Marbrand, Malister, Cargill, Westerling, Swan, Mullendore, Hightower, Florent, Frey, Penrose, Stokeworth, Derry, Perrin, Wild. It seemed as though every lordly house of the west and south had sent a knight or three to Ashford to see the fair maid and brave the lists in her honor. Yet, however fine their pavilions were to look upon, he knew there was no place there for him. A threadbare wool cloak would be all the shelter he had tonight. While the lords and great knights dined on capons and suckling pigs, Dunk's supper would be a hard, stringy piece of salt beef. He knew full well that if he made his camp upon that gaudy field, he would need to suffer both silent scorn and open mockery. A few, perhaps, would treat him kindly, yet in a way that was almost worse. A hedge knight must hold tight to his pride. Without it, he was no more than a sellsword. "I must earn my place in that company. If I fight well, some lord may take me into his household. I will ride a noble company then, and eat fresh meat every night in a castle hall, and raise my own pavilion at tourneys. But first I must do well." Reluctantly, he turned his back on the tourney grounds and led his horses into the trees. On the outskirts of the great meadow, a good half mile from town and castle, he found a place where a bend in a brook had formed a deep pool. Reeds grew thick along its edge, and a tall leafy elm presided over all. The spring grass there was as green as any knight's banner, and soft to the touch. It was a pretty spot, and no one had yet laid claim to it. "This will be my pavilion," Dunk told himself. "A pavilion fed with leaves, and greener even than the banners of the Tyrells and the Estermonts." His horses came first. After they had been tended, he stripped and led into the pool to wash away the dust of travel. "A true knight is cleanly as well as godly," the old man always said, insisting that they wash themselves head to heels every time the moon turned, whether they smelled sour or not. Now that he was a knight, Dunk vowed he would do the same. He sat naked under the elm while he dried, enjoying the warmth of spring air on his skin as he watched a dragonfly move lazily among the reeds. "Why would they name it a dragonfly?" he wondered. "It looks nothing like a dragon." Not that Dunk had ever seen a dragon. The old man had, though. Dunk had heard the story half a hundred times, how Sir Arlen had been just a little boy when his grandfather had taken him to King's Landing, and how they'd seen the last dragon there the year before it died. She'd been a green female, small and stunted, her wings withered. None of her eggs had ever hatched.
"Some say King Aegon poisoned her," the old man would tell. "The third Aegon that would be, not King Daron's father, but the one they named Dragonbane, or Aegon the Unlucky. He was afraid of dragons, for he'd seen his uncle's beast devour his own mother. The summers have been shorter since the last dragon died, and the winters longer and crueler."
The air began to cool as the sun dipped below the tops of the trees. When Dunk felt goose flesh prickling his arms, he beat his tunic and breeches against the trunk of the elm to knock off the worst of the dirt, and donned them once again. On the morrow, he could seek out the master of the games and enroll his name, but he had other matters he ought to look into tonight if he hoped to challenge. He did not need to study his reflection in the water to know that he did not look much a knight, so he slung Sir Arlen's shield across his back to display the sigil. Hobbling the horses, Dunk left them to crop the thick green grass beneath the elm as he set out on foot for the tourney grounds. In normal times, the meadow served as a commons for the folk of Ashford town across the river, but now it was transformed. A second town had sprung up overnight, a town of silk instead of stone, larger and fairer than its elder sister. Dozens of merchants had erected their stalls along the edge of the field, selling felts and fruits, belts and boots, hides and hawks, earthenware, gemstones, pewterwork, spices, feathers, and all manner of other goods. Jugglers, puppeteers, and magicians wandered among the crowds plying their trades, as did the whores and cutpurses. Dunk kept a wary hand on his coin. When he caught the smell of sausages sizzling over a smoky fire, his mouth began to water. He bought one with a copper from his pouch and a horn of ale to wash it down. As he ate, he watched a painted wooden knight battle a painted wooden dragon. The puppeteer who worked the dragon was good to watch, too, a tall drink of water with the olive skin and black hair of Dorn. She was slim as a lance with no breasts to speak of, but Dunk liked her face and the way her fingers made the dragon snap and slither at the end of its strings. He would have tossed the girl a copper if he'd had one to spare, but just now he needed every coin. There were armorers among the merchants, as he had hoped. A Tairashi with a forked blue beard was selling ornate helms, gorgeous fantastical things wrought in the shapes of birds and beasts and chased with gold and silver. Elsewhere, he found a sword maker hawking cheap steel blades and another whose work was much finer, but it was not a sword he lacked. The man he needed was all the way down at the end of the row. A shirt of fine chainmail and a pair of lobstered steel gauntlets displayed on the table before him. Dunk inspected them closely. "You do good work," he said.
"None better."
A stumpy man, the smith was no more than 5 feet tall, yet wide as Dunk about the chest and arms. He had a black beard, huge hands, and no trace of humility. "I need armor for the tourney," Dunk told him. "A suit of good mail, with gorget, greaves, and great helm." The old man's half-helm would fit his head, but he wanted more protection for his face than a nasal bar alone could provide. The armorer looked him up and down.
"You're a big one, but I've armored bigger."
He came out from behind the table.
"Kneel. I want to measure those shoulders." "Aye, and that thick neck of yours."
Dunk knelt. The armorer laid a length of knotted rawhide along his shoulders, grunted, slipped it about his throat, grunted again.
"Lift your arm. No, the right."
He grunted a third time.
"Now you can stand."
Inside of a leg, the thickness of his calf and the size of his waist elicited further grunts.
"I've some pieces in me wagon that might do for you,"
the man said when he was done.
"Nothing prettied up with gold nor silver, mind you, just good steel, strong and plain. I make elms that look like elms, not winged pigs and queer foreign fruits, but mine will serve you better if you take a lance in the face."
"That's all I want," said Dunk. "How much?"
800 stags, for I'm feeling kindly.
800?
It was more than he had expected.
I could trade you some old armor, made for a smaller man, half-helm, mail hauberk.
"Steely Pate sells only his own work,"
the man declared.
"But it might be I could make use of the metal. If it's not too rusted, I'll take it and armor you for 600.
Dunk could beseech Pate to give him the armor on trust, but he knew what sort of answer that request would likely get. He had traveled with the old man long enough to learn that merchants were notoriously mistrustful of hedge knights, some of whom were little better than robbers.
"I'll give you 2 silvers now, and the armor and the rest of the coin on the morrow."
The armourer studied him for a moment.
2 silvers buys you a day. After that, I sell me work to the next man.
Dunk scooped the stags out of his pouch and placed them in the armourer's calloused hand.
You'll get it all. I mean to be a champion here.
Do you?
Pate bit one of the coins.
And these others? I suppose they all came just to cheer you on?
The moon was well up by the time he turned his steps back toward his elm. Behind him, Ashford Meadow was ablaze with torchlight. The sounds of song and laughter drifted across the grass, but his own mood was somber. He could think of only one way to raise the coin for his armor, and if he should be defeated.
1 victory is all I need, he muttered aloud. That's not so much to hope for.
Even so, the old man would never have hoped for it. Sir Arlen had not ridden a tilt since the day he had been unhorsed by the Prince of Dragonstone in a tourney at Storm's End many years before.
It is not every man who can boast that he broke 7 lances against the finest knight in the 7 kingdoms, he would say. I could never hope to do better, so why should I try?
Dunk had suspected that Sir Arlen's age had more to do with it than the Prince of Dragonstone did, but he never dared say as much. The old man had his pride, even at the last.
I am quick and strong. He always said so. What was true for him need not be true for me, he told himself stubbornly.
He was moving through a patch of weed, chewing over his chances in his head, when he saw the flicker of firelight through the bushes.
What is this?
Dunk did not stop to think. Suddenly his sword was in his hand, and he was crashing through the grass. He burst out roaring and cursing, only to jerk to a sudden halt at the sight of the boy beside the campfire.
You!
He lowered the sword.
What are you doing here? Cooking a fish? Said the bald boy. Do you want some? I meant, how did you get here? Did you steal a horse? I rode in the back of a cart with a man who was bringing some lambs to the castle for my Lord of Ashford's table. Well, you'd best see if he's gone yet, or find another cart. I won't have you here. You can't make me go,
the boy said, impertinent.
I'd had enough of that inn. I'll have no more insolence from you,
Dunk warned.
I should throw you over my horse right now and take you home. You need to ride all the way to King's Landing, said the boy. You'd miss the tourney.
King's Landing. For a moment, Dunk wondered if he was being mocked, but the boy had no way of knowing that he had been born in King's Landing as well. Another wretch from Flea Bottom, like as not, and who can blame him for wanting out of that place? He felt foolish standing there with sword in hand over an 8-year-old orphan. He sheathed it, glowering so the boy would see that he would suffer no nonsense.
I ought to give him a good beating at the least, he thought.
But the child looked so pitiful he could not bring himself to hit him. He glanced around the camp. The fire was burning merrily within a neat circle of rocks. The horses had been brushed, and clothes were hanging from the elm, drying above the flames.
What are those doing there?
I washed them, the boy said, and I groomed the horses, made the fire, and caught this fish. I would have raised your pavilion, but I couldn't find one.
There's my pavilion.
Dunk swept a hand above his head at the branches of the tall elm that loomed above them.
That's a tree,
the boy said, unimpressed.
It's all the pavilion a true knight needs. I would sooner sleep under the stars than in some smoky tent.
What if it rains?
The tree will shelter me.
Trees leak.
Dunk laughed.
So they do. Well, if truth be told, I lack the coin for a pavilion, and you'd best turn that fish or it will be burned on the bottom and raw on the top. You'd never make a kitchen boy.
I would if I wanted,
the boy said, but he turned the fish.
What happened to your hair?
Dunk asked of him.
The maesters shaved it off.
Suddenly self-conscious, the boy pulled up the hood of his dark brown cloak, covering his head. Dunk had heard that they did that sometimes, to treat lice or rootworms or certain sicknesses.
Are you ill?
No,
said the boy.
"What's your name?"
"Dunk," he said. The wretched boy laughed aloud as if that was the funniest thing he'd ever heard.
"Dunk,"
he said.
"Sir Dunk? That's no name for a knight. Is it short for Duncan?"
Was it? The old man had called him just Dunk for as long as he could recall, and he did not remember much of his life before.
"Duncan, yes," he said. "Sir Duncan of..."
Dunk had no other name, nor any house. Sir Arlen had found him living wild in the stews and alleys of Flea Bottom. He had never known his father or mother. What was he to say? Sir Duncan of Flea Bottom did not sound very knightly. He could take Pennytree, but what if they asked him where it was? Dunk had never been to Pennytree, nor had the old man talked much about it. He frowned for a moment and then blurted out,
"Sir Duncan the Tall."
He was tall, no one could dispute that, and it sounded puissant, though the little sneak did not seem to think so.
"I have never heard of any Sir Duncan the Tall." "Do you know every knight in the Seven Kingdoms, then?"
The boy looked at him boldly.
"The good ones?" "I'm as good as any. After the tourney, they'll all know that. Do you have a name, thief?"
The boy hesitated.
"Egg,"
he said. Dunk did not laugh.
"His head does look like an egg. Small boys can be cruel, and grown men as well. Egg," he said. "I should beat you bloody and send you on your way. But the truth is, I have no pavilion and I have no squire either. If you'll swear to do as you're told, I'll let you serve me for the tourney. After that, well, we'll see. If I decide you're worth your keep, you'll have clothes on your back and food in your belly. The clothes might be rough spun and the food salt beef and salt fish, and maybe some venison from time to time, where there are no foresters about, but you won't go hungry. And I promise not to beat you except when you deserve it."
Egg smiled.
"Yes, my lord."
"Sir," Dunk corrected.
"I am only a hedge knight."
He wondered if the old man was looking down on him.
"I will teach him the arts of battle the same as you taught me, sir. He seems a likely lad. Might be one day he'll make a knight."
The fish was still a little raw on the inside when they ate it, and the boy had not removed all the bones, but it still tasted a world better than hard salt beef. Egg soon fell asleep beside the dying fire. Dunk lay on his back nearby, his big hands behind his head, gazing up at the night sky. He could hear distant music from the tourney grounds half a mile away. The stars were everywhere. Thousands and thousands of them. One fell as he was watching, a bright green streak that flashed across the black and then was gone. "A falling star brings luck to him who sees it," Dunk thought. "But the rest of them are all in their pavilions by now, staring up at silk instead of sky. So the luck is mine alone."
The Mystery Knight, A Tale of the Seven Kingdoms. A light summer rain was falling as Dunk and Egg took their leave of Stony Sept. Dunk rode his old war horse Thunder, with Egg beside him on the spirited young palfrey he'd named Rain, leading their mule, Maester. On Maester's back were bundled Dunk's armor and Egg's books, their bedrolls, tent, and clothing, several slabs of hard salt beef, half a flagon of mead, and two skins of water. Egg's old straw hat, wide-brimmed and floppy, kept the rain off the mule's head. The boy had cut holes for Maester's ears. Egg's new straw hat was on his own head. Except for the ear holes, the two hats looked much the same to Dunk. As they neared the town gates, Egg reined up sharply. Up above the gateway, a traitor's head had been impaled upon an iron spike. It was fresh from the look of it, the flesh more pink than green, but the carrion crows had already gone to work on it. The dead man's lips and cheeks were torn and ragged. His eyes were two brown holes, weeping slow red tears as raindrops mingled with the crusted blood. The dead man's mouth sagged open, as if to harangue travelers passing through the gate below. Dunk had seen such sights before. Back in King's Landing, when I was a boy, I stole a head right off its spike once, he told Egg. Actually, it had been Ferret who scampered up the wall to snatch the head after Rafe and Pudding said he'd never dare. But when the guards came running, he tossed it down, and Dunk was the one who'd caught it. Some rebel lord or robber knight it was, or maybe just a common murderer. A head's a head. They all looked the same after a few days on a spike. Him and his three friends had used the head to terrorize the girls of Flea Bottom. They'd chase them through the alleys and make them give the head a kiss before they'd let them go. That head got kissed a lot, as he recalled. There wasn't a girl in King's Landing who could run as fast as Rafe. Egg was better off not hearing that part, though. Ferret, Rafe, and Pudding. Little monsters, those three, and me the worst of all. His friends and he had kept the head until the flesh turned black and began to slough away. That took the fun out of chasing girls, so one night they burst into a pot shop and tossed what was left into the kettle. The crows always go for the eyes, he told Egg. Then the cheeks cave in. The flesh turns green. He squinted. Wait, I know that face.
You do, sir, said Egg. 3 days ago, the hunchbacked Septon we heard preaching against Lord Bloodraven.
He remembered then. He was a holy man sworn to the Seven, even if he did preach treason.
His hands are scarlet with a brother's blood, and the blood of his young nephews, too, the hunchback had declared to the crowd that had gathered in the market square. A shadow came at his command to strangle brave Prince Valar's sons in their mother's womb. Where is our young prince now? Where is his brother, sweet Materis? Where has good King Daeron gone and fearless Baelor Breakspear? The grave has claimed them, every one, yet he endures this pale bird with bloody beak who perches on King Ares' shoulder and caws into his ear. The mark of hell is on his face and in his empty eye, and he has brought us drought and pestilence and murder. Rise up, I say, and remember our true king across the water. Seven gods there are, and seven kingdoms, and the black dragon sired seven sons. Rise up, my lords and ladies! Rise up, you brave knights and sturdy yeomen, and cast down Bloodraven, that foul sorcerer, lest your children and your children's children be cursed forevermore.
Every word was treason. Even so, it was a shock to see him here with holes where his eyes had been.
That's him, aye, Dunk said, and another good reason to put this town behind us.
He gave Thunder a touch of the spur, and he and Egg rode through the gates of Stony Sept, listening to the soft sound of the rain. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? The riddle ran. 1,000 eyes and 1. Some claimed the king's hand was a student of the dark arts who could change his face, put on the likeness of a one-eyed dog, even turn into a mist. Packs of gaunt gray wolves hunted down his foes, men said, and carrion crows spied for him and whispered secrets in his ear. Most of the tales were only tales, Dunk did not doubt, but no one could doubt that Bloodraven had informers everywhere. He had seen the man once with his own two eyes, back in King's Landing. White as bone were the skin and hair of Brynden Rivers, and his eye. He had only the one, the other having been lost to his half-brother Bittersteel on the Redgrass Field, was red as blood. On cheek and neck he bore the wine-stained birthmark that had given him his name. When the town was well behind them, Dunk cleared his throat and said, "Bad business, cutting off the heads of Septons. All he did was talk. Words are wind."
"Some words are wind, sir. Some are treason."
Egg was skinny as a stick, all ribs and elbows, but he did have a mouth.
"Now you sound a proper princeling."
Egg took that for an insult, which it was. He might have been a septon, but he was preaching lies, Sare. The drought wasn't Lord Bloodraven's fault, nor the Great Spring Sickness, either.
Might be that so, but if we start cutting off the heads of all the fools and liars, half the towns in the Seven Kingdoms will be empty.
The Sworn Sword, A Tale of the Seven Kingdoms. In an iron cage at the crossroads, two dead men were rotting in the summer sun. Egg stopped below to have a look at them. Who do you think they were, sir? His mule, Maester, grateful for the respite, began to crop the dry brown devil grass along the verges, heedless of the two huge wine casks on his back.
Robbers, Dunk said.
Mounted atop Thunder, he was much closer to the dead men.
Rapers, murderers.
Dark circles stained his old green tunic under both arms. The sky was blue and the sun was blazing hot, and he had sweated gallons since breaking camp this morning. Egg took off his wide-brimmed floppy straw hat. Beneath, his head was bald and shiny. He used the hat to fan away the flies. There were hundreds crawling on the dead men, and more drifting lazily through the still hot air. It must have been something bad for them to be left to die inside a crow cage. Sometimes Egg could be as wise as any maester, but other times he was still a boy of 10.
There are lords and lords, Dunk said. Some don't need much reason to put a man to death.
The iron cage was barely big enough to hold one man, yet two had been forced inside it. They stood face to face with their arms and legs in a tangle and their backs against the hot black iron of the bars. One had tried to eat the other, gnawing at his neck and shoulder. The crows had been at both of them. When Dunk and Egg had come around the hill, the birds had risen like a black cloud, so thick that Maester spooked.
Whoever they were, they look half-starved, Dunk said.
Skeletons in skin, and the skin is green and rotting.
Might be they stole some bread, or poached a deer in some lord's wood.
With the drought entering its second year, most lords had become less tolerant of poaching, and they hadn't been very tolerant to begin with.
It could be they were in some outlaw band.
At dusk, they'd heard a harper sing the day they hanged Black Robin. Ever since, Egg had been seeing gallant outlaws behind every bush. Dunk had met a few outlaws while squiring for the old man. He was in no hurry to meet any more. None of the ones he'd known had been especially gallant. He remembered one outlaw, Sir Arlan had helped hang, who'd been fond of stealing rings. He would cut off a man's fingers to get at them, but with women, he preferred to bite. There were no songs about him that Dunk knew. Outlaws or poachers makes no matter. Dead men make poor company. He walked Thunder slowly around the cage. The empty eyes seemed to follow him. One of the dead men had his head down and his mouth gaping open. He has no tongue, Dunk observed. He supposed the crows might have eaten it. Crows always pecked a corpse's eyes out first, he had heard, but maybe the tongue went second. Or maybe a lord had torn it out for something that he said. Dunk pushed his fingers through his mop of sun-streaked hair. The dead were beyond his help, and they had casks of wine to get to Standfast.
Which way did we come? He asked, looking from one road to the other. I'm turned around. Standfast is that way, sir, Egg pointed. That's for us, then. We could be back by evenfall, but not if we sit here all day counting flies.
He touched Thunder with his heels and turned the big destrier toward the left-hand fork. Egg put his floppy hat back on and tugged sharply at Maester's lead. The mule left off cropping at the devil grass and came along without an argument for once. He's hot as well, Dunk thought, and those wine casks must be heavy. The summer sun had baked the road as hard as brick. Its ruts were deep enough to break a horse's leg, so Dunk was careful to keep Thunder to the higher ground between them. He had twisted his own ankle the day they left Dusk, walking in the black of night when it was cooler. A knight had to learn to live with aches and pains, the old man used to say. Aye, lad, and with broken bones and scars. They're as much a part of knighthood as your swords and shields. If Thunder was to break a leg, though, well, A knight without a horse was no knight at all. Egg followed 5 yards behind him with Maester and the wine casks. The boy was walking with one bare foot in a rut and one out, so he rose and fell with every step. His dagger was sheathed on one hip, his boots slung over his backpack, his ragged brown tunic rolled up and knotted around his waist. Beneath his wide-brimmed straw hat, his face was smudged and dirty, his eyes large and dark. He was 10, not quite 5 feet tall. Of late, he had been sprouting fast, though he had a long way to grow before he'd be catching up to Dunk. He looked just like the stable boy he wasn't, and not at all like who he really was. The dead men soon disappeared behind them, but Dunk found himself thinking about them all the same. The realm was full of lawless men these days. The drought showed no signs of ending, and small folk by the thousands had taken to the roads looking for some place where the rain still fell. Lord Bloodraven had commanded them to return to their own lands and lords, but few obeyed. Many blamed Bloodraven and King Aerys for the drought. It was a judgment from the gods, they said, for the Kinslayer is accursed. If they were wise, though, they did not say it loudly. How many eyes does Lord Bloodraven have? Ran the riddle Egg had heard in Old Town. 1,000 eyes and 1. 6 years ago, in King's Landing, Dunk had seen him with his own 2 eyes as he rode a pale horse up the Street of Steel with 50 raven's teeth behind him. That was before King Aerys had ascended to the Iron Throne and made him the Hand, but even so, he cut a striking figure, garbed in smoke and scarlet, with Dark Sister on his hip. His pallid skin and bone-white hair made him look like a living corpse. Across his cheek and chin spread a wine-stained birthmark that was supposed to resemble a red raven, though Dunk only saw an odd-shaped blotch of discoloured skin. He stared so hard that Bloodraven felt it. The king's sorcerer had turned to study him as he went by. He had 1 eye, and that one red. The other was an empty socket, the gift Bittersteel had given him upon the red grass field. Yet it seemed to Dunk that both eyes had looked right through his skin, down to his very soul. Despite the heat, the memory made him shiver. "Sir," Egg called, "are you unwell?"
"No," said Dunk, "I'm as hot and thirsty as them."
He pointed toward the field beyond the road, where rows of melons were shriveling on the vines. Along the verges, goat heads and tufts of devil grass still clung to life, but the crops were not faring near as well. Dunk knew just how the melons felt. Sir Arlan used to say that no hedge knight need ever go thirsty. Not so long as he has a helm to catch the rain in. Rainwater is the best drink there is, lad. The old man never saw a summer like this one, though. Dunk had left his helm at Standfast. It was too hot and heavy to wear, and there had been precious little rain to catch in it. What's a hedge knight to do when even the hedges are brown and parched and dying? Maybe when they reached the stream, he'd have a soak. He smiled, thinking how good that would feel, to jump right in and come up sopping wet and grinning, with water cascading down his cheeks and through his tangled hair and his tunic clinging sodden to his skin. Egg might want a soak as well, though the boy looked cool and dry, more dusty than sweaty. He never sweated much. He liked the heat. In Dawn, he went about bare-chested and turned brown as a Dornishman. It is his dragon blood, Dunk told himself. Whoever heard of a sweaty dragon? He would gladly have pulled his own tunic off, but it would not be fitting. A hedge knight could ride bare-naked if he chose. He had no one to shame but himself. It was different when your sword was sworn. When you accept a lord's meat and mead, all you do reflects on him, Sir Arlan used to say. Always do more than he expects of you, never less. Never flinch at any task or hardship, and, above all, never shame the lord you serve. At Standfast, meat and mead meant chicken and ale, but Sir Eustace ate the same plain fare himself. Dunk kept his tunic on and sweltered. Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield was waiting at the old plank bridge.
"So, you come back," he called out. "You were gone so long, I thought you'd run off with the old man's silver."
Bennis was sitting on his shaggy garron, chewing a wad of sour leaf that made it look as if his mouth were full of blood.
"We had to go all the way to Dosk to find some wine," Dunk told him. "The Krakens raided little Dosk. They carried off the wealth and women and burned half of what they did not take."
That Dagon Greyjoy wants for hanging, Bennis said. Aye, but who's to hang him? You see old Pinchbottom Pate?
They told us he was dead. The Iron Men killed him when he tried to stop them taking off his daughter.
Seven bloody hells, Bennis turned his head and spat. I seen that daughter once. Not worth dying for, you ask me. That fool Pate owed me half a silver.
The Brown Knight looked just as he had when they left. Worse, he smelled the same as well. He wore the same garb every day, brown breeches, a shapeless rough-spun tunic, horsehide boots. When armoured, he donned a loose brown surcoat over a shirt of rusted mail. His sword belt was a cord of boiled leather, and his seamed face might have been made of the same thing. His head looks like one of those shriveled melons that we passed. Even his teeth were brown, under the red stains left by the sour leaf he liked to chew. Amidst all that brownness, his eyes stood out. They were a pale green, squinty small, close-set, and shiny bright with malice.
Only two casks, he observed. Sir Useless wanted four.
We were lucky to find two, said Dunk. The drought reached the arbor, too. We heard the grapes are turning into raisins on the vines, and the Iron Men have been pirating.
Sir, Egg broke in, the water's gone. Dunk had been so intent on Bennis that he hadn't noticed. Beneath the warped wooden planks of the bridge, only sand and stones remained. That's queer. The stream was running low when we left, but it was running. Bennis laughed. He had two sorts of laughs. Sometimes he cackled like a chicken, and sometimes he brayed louder than Egg's mule. This was his chicken laugh.
Dried up while you was gone, I guess. A drought'll do that.
Dunk was dismayed. Well, I won't be soaking now. He swung down to the ground. What's going to happen to the crops? Half the wells in the reach had gone dry, and all the rivers were running low, even the Blackwater Rush and the Mighty Mander.
Nasty stuff, water, Bennis said. Drank some once, and it made me sick as a dog. Wine's better.
Not for oats. Not for barleycorn. Not for carrots, onions, cabbages. Even grapes need water.
Dunk shook his head.
How could it go dry so quick? We've only been 6 days. Wasn't much water in there to start with, Dunk. Time was, I could piss me bigger streams than this one.
Not Dunk, said Dunk. I told you that.
He wondered why he bothered. Bennis was a mean-mouthed man, and it pleased him to make mock.
I'm called Sir Duncan the Tall.
By who? You bald pup.
He looked at Egg and laughed his chicken laugh.
You're taller than when you did for Penny Tree, but you still look a proper Dunk to me.
Dunk rubbed the back of his neck and stared down at the rocks.
What should we do?
Fetch home the wines and tell Sir Useless his stream's gone dry. The Standfast well still draws, he won't go thirsty.
Don't call him useless.
Dunk was fond of the old knight.
You sleep beneath his roof. Give him some respect.
You respect him for the both of us, Dunk, said Bennis. I'll call him what I will.
The silvery grey planks creaked heavily as Dunk walked out onto the bridge to frown down at the sand and stones below. A few small brown pools glistened amongst the rocks he saw, none larger than his hand.
Dead fish, there and there, see?
The smell of them reminded him of the dead men at the crossroads.
I see them, sir, said Egg.
Dunk hopped down to the stream bed, squatted on his heels and turned over a stone. Dry and warm on top, moist and muddy underneath.
The water can't have been gone long.
Standing, he flicked the stone sidearm at the bank where it crashed through a crumbling overhang in a puff of dry brown earth.
The soil's cracked along the banks, but soft and muddy in the middle.
Those fish were alive yesterday.
Dunk the Lunk, Penny Tree used to call you, I recall.
Sir Bennis spat a wad of sour leaf onto the rocks. It glistened red and slimy in the sunlight.
Lunks shouldn't try and think. Their heads is too bloody thick for such.
Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall. From Sir Erlan, the words had been affectionate. He had been a kindly man, even in his scolding. In the mouth of Sir Bennis of the Brown Shield, they sounded different.
Sir Erlan's 2 years dead, Dunk said, and I'm called Sir Duncan the Tall.
He was sorely tempted to put his fist through the Brown Knight's face and smash those red and rotten teeth to splinters. Bennis of the Brown Shield might be a nasty piece of work, but Dunk had a good foot and a half on him, and 4 stone as well. He might be a lunk, but he was big. Sometimes it seemed as though he'd thumped his head on half the doors in Westeros, not to mention every beam in every inn from dawn up to the neck. Egg's brother Aemon had measured him in Old Town and found he lacked an inch of 7 feet, but that was half a year ago. He might have grown since. Growing was the one thing that Dunk did really well, the old man used to say. He went back to Thunder and mounted up again. Egg, get on back to Standfast with the wine. I'm going to see what's happened to the water. Streams dry up all the time, said Bennis. I just want to have a look. Like how you looked under that rock. Shouldn't go turning over rocks, Lunk. Never know what might crawl out. We got us nice straw pallets back at Standfast. There's eggs more days than not, and not much to do but listen to Sir Useless go on about how great he used to be. Leave it be, I say. The stream went dry, that's all. Dunk was nothing if not stubborn. Sir Eustace is waiting on his wine, he told Egg. Tell him where I went.
I will, sir.
Egg gave a tug on Maester's lead. The mule twitched his ears but started off again at once. He wants to get those wine casks off his back. Dunk could not blame him. The stream flowed north and east when it was flowing, so he turned Thunder south and west. He had not ridden 12 yards before Bennis caught him. I best come see you don't get hanged. He pushed a fresh sour leaf into his mouth. Pass that clump of sand willows. The whole right bank is spider land. I'll stay on our side. Dunk wanted no trouble with the Lady of the Cold Moat. At Standfast, he heard ill things of her. The Red Widow, she was called, for the husband she had put into the ground. Old Sam Stoops said she was a witch, a poisoner, and worse. 2 years ago, she had sent her knights across the stream to seize an Osprey man for stealing sheep. When my lord rode to Colmoat to demand him back, he was told to look for him at the bottom of the moat, Sam had said. She'd sewn poor Dake in a bag of rocks and sunk him. 'Twas after that Sir Eustace took Sir Bennis into service to keep them spiders off his lands. Thunder kept a slow, steady pace beneath the broiling sun. The sky was blue and hard, with no hint of cloud anywhere to be seen. The course of the stream meandered around rocky knolls and forlorn willows, through bare brown hills and fields of dead and dying grain. An hour upstream from the bridge, they found themselves riding on the edge of the small Osgrave forest called Watts Wood. The greenery looked inviting from afar and filled Dunk's head with thoughts of shady glens and chuckling brooks, but when they reached the trees, they found them thin and scraggly, with drooping limbs. Some of the great oaks were shedding leaves, and half the pines had turned as brown as Sir Bennis, with rings of dead needles girdling their trunks. Worse and worse, thought Dunk. One spark, and this will all go up like tinder. For the moment, though, the tangled underbrush along the Checky Water was still thick with thorny vines, nettles, and tangles of briarwhite and young willow. Rather than fight through it, they crossed the dry stream bed to the cold moat side where the trees had been cleared away for pasture. Amongst the parched brown grasses and faded wild flowers, a few black-nosed sheep were grazing.
Never knew an animal stupid as a sheep, Sir Bennis commented. Think they're kin to you, Lunk?
When Dunk did not reply, he laughed his chicken laugh again. Half a league farther south, they came upon the dam. It was not large, as such things went, but it looked strong. 2 stout wooden barricades had been thrown across the stream from bank to bank, made from the trunks of trees with the bark still on. The space between them was filled with rocks and earth and packed down hard. Behind the dam, the flow was creeping up the banks and spilling off into a ditch that had been cut through Lady Webber's fields. Dunk stood in his stirrups for a better look. The glint of sun on water betrayed a score of lesser channels, running off in all directions like a spider's web. They are stealing our stream. The sight filled him with indignation, especially when it dawned on him that the trees must surely have been taken from Watts Wood.
See what you went and did, Lunk, said Bennis. Couldn't have it that the stream dried up, no. Might be this starts with water, but it'll end with blood. Yours and mine, most like.
The brown knight drew his sword.
Well, no help for it now. There's your thrice damned diggers. Best we put some fear in them.
He raked his garron with his spurs and galloped through the grass. Dunk had no choice but to follow. Sir Arlan's long sword rode his hip, a good straight piece of steel. If these ditch-diggers have a lick of sense, they'll run. Thunder's hooves kicked up clods of dirt. One man dropped his shovel at the sight of the oncoming knights, but that was all. There were a score of the diggers, short and tall, old and young, all baked brown by the sun. They formed a ragged line as Bennis slowed, clutching their spades and picks.
"This is cold malt land," one shouted.
"And that's an Osgray stream," Bennis pointed with his long sword. "Who put that damned dam up?"
"Maester Serric made it," said one young digger.
"No," an older man insisted. "The grey pup pointed some and said do this and do that, but it were us who made it."
"Then you can bloody well unmake it."
The digger's eyes were sullen and defiant. One wiped the sweat off his brow with the back of his hand. No one spoke.
"You lot don't hear so good," said Bennis. "Do I need to lop me off an ear or two? Who's first?"
"This is Weberland." The old digger was a scrawny fellow, stooped and stubborn.
"You got no right to be here. Lop off any ears and m'lady will drown you in a sack."
Bennis rode closer.
"Don't see no ladies here, just some mouthy peasant."
He poked the digger's bare brown chest with the point of his sword, just hard enough to draw a bead of blood. "He goes too far."
"Put up your steel," Dung warned him. "This is not his doing. This maester set them to the task."
"It's for the crop, sir," a jug-eared digger said. "The wheat was dying, the maester said. The pear trees too."
"Well, maybe them pear trees die, or maybe you do."
"Your talk don't frighten us," said the old man.
"No."
Bennis made his long sword whistle, opening the old man's cheek from ear to jaw.
"I said, them pear trees die, or you do."
The digger's blood ran red down one side of his face. He should not have done that. Dunk had to swallow his rage. Bennis was on his side in this.
"Get away from here," he shouted at the diggers. "Go back to your lady's castle."
"Run," Sir Bennis urged. Three of them let go of their tools and did just that, sprinting through the grass. But another man, sunburned and brawny, hefted a pick and said,
"There's only two of them."
"Shovels against swords is a fool's fight, Jorgen," the old man said, holding his face. Blood trickled through his fingers.
"This won't be the end of this. Don't think it will.
One more word, and I might be the end of you."
"We meant no harm to you," Dunk said, to the old man's bloody face. "All we want is our water. Tell your lady that."
"Oh, we'll tell her, sir,"
promised the brawny man, still clutching his pick.
"That we will."
On the way home, they cut through the heart of Watts Wood, grateful for the small measure of shade provided by the trees. Even so, they cooked. Supposedly, there were deer in the wood, but the only living things they saw were flies. They buzzed about Dunk's face as he rode and crept around Thunder's eyes, irritating the big warhorse no end. The air was still, suffocating. At least in dawn, the days were dry, and at night it grew so cold I shivered in my cloak. In the reach, the nights were hardly cooler than the days, even this far north. When ducking down beneath an overhanging limb, Dunk plucked a leaf and crumpled it between his fingers. It fell apart like thousand-year-old parchment in his hand.
"There was no need to cut that man," he told Bennis.
"A tickle on the cheek was all it was, to teach him to mind his tongue. I should have cut his bloody throat for him, only then the rest would have run like rabbits, and we'd have had to ride down the lot of them."
"You'd kill 20 men, Dunk said, incredulous.
22? That's 2 more than all your fingers and your toes, Lunk. You have to kill them all, else they go telling tales."
They circled round a deadfall.
"We should have told Sir Eustace the drought dried up his little pissant stream."
"Sir Eustace, you would have lied to him."
"Aye, and why not? Who's to tell him any different? The flies!"
Bennis grinned a wet red grin.
"Sir Eustace never leaves the tower except to see the boys down in the blackberries."
"A sworn sword owes his lord the truth."
"There's truths and truths, Lunk. Some don't serve," he spat. "The gods make droughts. A man can't do a bloody buggering thing about the gods. The Red Widow, though. We tell Useless that bitch dog took his water, he'll feel honour bound to take it back. Wait and see. He'll think he's got to do something."
"He should. Our small folk need that water for their crops."
"Our small folk!"
Sir Bennis brayed his laughter.
Was I off having a squat when Sir Useless made you his heir? How many small folk you figure you got? 10? And that's counting Squinty Jane's half-wit son that don't know which end of the axe to hold. Go make knights of everyone, and we'll have half as many as the widow, and never mind her squires and her archers and the rest. You'd need both hands and both feet to count all them, and your bald-head boy's fingers and toes, too.
I don't need toes to count. Dunk was sick of the heat, the flies, and the brown knight's company. He may have ridden with Sir Arlan once, but that was years and years ago. The man is grown mean and false and craven. He put his heels into his horse and trotted on ahead to put the smell behind him.
Arya. At Winterfell, they had called her Arya Horseface, and she thought nothing could be worse. But that was before the orphan boy, Lummy Greenhands, had named her Lumpy Head. Her head felt lumpy when she touched it. When Yoren had dragged her into that alley, she thought he meant to kill her. But the sour old man had only held her tight, sawing through her mats and tangles with his dagger. She remembered how the breeze sent the fistfuls of dirty brown hair skittering across the paving stones towards the sept where her father had died.
"I'm taking men and boys from the city," Yoren growled as the sharp steel scraped at her head. "Now you all still, boy."
By the time he had finished, her scalp was nothing but tufts and stubble. Afterwards he told her that from there to Winterfell she'd be Arry the Orphan Boy.
"Gate shouldn't be hard, but the road's another matter. You've got a long way to go in bad company. I got 30 this time, men and boys all bound for the wall, and don't be thinking they're like that bastard brother of yours." He shook her. "Lord Eddard gave me pick of the dungeons, but I didn't find no little lordlings down there. This lot, half of them, would turn you over to the Queen, quick as spit for a pardon and maybe a few silvers. The other half will do the same, only they'd rape you first. So you keep to yourself and make your water in the woods alone. That'll be the hardest part, the pissing. So don't drink no more than you need."
Leaving King's Landing was easy, just like he'd said. The Lannister guardsmen on the gate were stopping everyone, but Yoren called out one by name, and their wagons were waved through. No one spared Arya a glance. They were looking for a high-born girl, daughter of the king's hand, not for a skinny boy with his hair chopped off. Arya never looked back. She wished the rush would rise and wash the whole city away, Flea Bottom and the Red Keep and the Great Sept and everything, and everyone too, especially Prince Joffrey and his mother. But she knew it wouldn't. And anyhow, Sansa was still in the city and would wash away too. When she remembered that, Arya decided to wish for Winterfell instead. Yoren was wrong about the pissing, though. That wasn't the hardest part at all. Lummy Greenhands and hot pie were the hardest part. Orphan boys. Yoren had plucked some from the streets, with promises of food for their bellies and shoes for their feet. The rest he'd found in chains.
"The watch needs good men," he told them as they set out, "but you lot will have to do."
Yoren had taken grown men from the dungeons as well, thieves and poachers and rapers and the like. The worst were the three he'd found in the black cells, who must have scared even him, because he kept them fettered hand and foot in the back of a wagon and vowed they'd stay in irons all the way to the wall. One had no nose, only the hole in his face where it had been cut off, and the gross fat bald one, with the pointed teeth and the weeping sores on his cheeks, had eyes like nothing human. They took 5 wagons out of King's Landing, laden with supplies for the wall, hides and bolts of cloth, bars of pig iron, a cage of ravens, books and papers and ink, a baleful of sour leaf, jars of oil, and chests of medicine and spices. Teams of plough horses pulled the wagons, and Yoren had bought 2 courses and a half dozen donkeys for the boys. Arya would have preferred a real horse, but the donkey was better than riding on a wagon. The men paid her no mind, but she was not so lucky with the boys. She was 2 years younger than the youngest orphan, not to mention smaller and skinnier, and Lommy and Hot Pie took her silence to mean she was scared or stupid or deaf.